Talk It Over with Terry Spence. Call us direct or collect 250-386-1161 or on your cell at star 1070. It's Talk It Over with Terry Spence on CFAX 1070.
Next on the program, we're going to talk to a psychologist who uses fairy tales in her treatments with her patients. An idea that struck me as interesting, different, and worthy of discussion here on the program today. And so we go to Pennsylvania and say good afternoon to Dr. Marcella Shields. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you very much.
How does all this work, fairy tales in a psychological treatment setting? It seems a bit unusual, to say the word, the least.
Well, fairy tales have a lot of power in that they carry archetypal energy. Images in fairy tales transcend cultures and time. In the Once Upon a Time There Was a Little Girl, I talk about how fairy tales helped seven women who had early traumas find a way into their story. See, the earlier we have a trauma in our life, the less words we have to tell that story.
Yes.
So fairy tales provide the initial words, and they invite us into a realm of possibility that often doesn't look probable in our life. We think about the fairy tales that we perhaps heard in childhood or even recently, you notice that no matter how desperate the heroine or hero are, they seem to get through.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they, at the end, you can... Does that help you see that even though things are pretty gloomy now, it's all going to be okay in time?
Yes, it does. And it also helps to raise the awareness that it's not going to be easy.
Yes.
It's not magic. You have to face the foe over and over and over. And then you finally come to the point of triumph.
So you got the big bad wolf and you've got the, wicked witches and all those things to get past before you finally get to where you want to be.
Exactly. And so for each of the women in Once Upon a Time There Was a Girl, the fact that they could begin to put words to their stories and then move into the possibility that they could have power over their own lives was quite marvelous to witness.
Now, these were real people that you were treating, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. They're actually seven kidney men.
Now, at what ages were they when you were dealing with them and helping them through their issues?
Okay, they ranged from age 35 to 50.
Good. So they're not 9-year-olds.
Oh, no.
These are mature people who have lived some years and are, except for your inner treatment, they were past their fairy tale time in life.
Right, exactly. Yes. the reasons each of these women had come to me was because they were suffering from depression. And the depression was a long-term depression. If you met them, you would think, well, they seem quite fine.
Yeah.
Quite functional, but inside they were suffering. And even though they put on a good face, and many were professional women, they never had any deep sense of satisfaction with their life, a deep sense of even belonging. Several had tried to commit suicide, and luckily had not succeeded.
How do you recognize that? I mean, in your profession, what is it about people that you can see that perhaps others can't see that tells you that they have depression and a need for treatment?
Well, one of the signs of depression, of course, is loss of interest.
Yes.
And loss of interest in life. An inability to see oneself as creative and having potential for something new and contributing to the society in a larger way. And when you're depressed, you're, as a man or woman, you feel like you're in a state of semi-consciousness. In other words, you can get through life, you move through life, but you feel like you're in a state of being only half alive, half awake, half engaged. And when a person comes to me and they can't remember anything in their early life, they don't have any memories before, say, they were 7 or even 5, I often suggest that they tell me a fairy tale that they remember from their childhood.
Yes.
Sometimes they don't remember any fairy tales. And if that's the case, I ask them to either write me a fairy tale or find one that they would tell a 5-year-old. And what happens is, in the process of really wanting to know, the words will come out through the tale, or the images will come. And this is especially valuable for people that don't remember their dreams, because dreams are actually like fairy tales. They're products of the imagination.
So that's it. So they think they're making up a story, but they're actually just remembering the story, in effect, are they?
Well, actually, it may not be that they're remembering a story, as that they're beginning to give words to what might be missing or what might be the dilemma. And when they begin to go into the story, they discover, oh, yes, there is something here. For example, one woman came to me, and she had made up this fairy tale about a little bird that was in a cage and was fed very well but couldn't sing.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw herself as that little bird in the cage. And she felt she just couldn't go on with her life if she couldn't sing. And so I asked her to elaborate on the tale. See who else was there. Who fed the bird? How did she respond? What did the people who fed the bird want from the bird? Well, then all kinds of things started to come to her about how she felt she had been sheltered all of her life and that she had no choice. If she was going to survive, she had to stay in that cage. And she made a decision to literally fly out of that cage.
Mm.
So that's a kind of an example.
And at what point do these people realize it's their own story they're telling, or do they realize that?
Well, they do realize it. As they're telling the story, I will reflect back to them what it is I'm hearing.
Yes.
Maybe it expand a little. And what happens is, the most marvelous thing about us as humans is if we really want to know what's keeping us from embracing our life fully, if we really want to know that, our unconscious will tell us. And the fact that someone would walk into my office and say, I really want to know, tells me they're ready to, they're ready and they're open to the clues. The fairy tales provide the clues. And when you're open to the clues and you pursue the clue, the message then comes clear. Not immediately, certainly, but gradually.
Does it scare them when it finally occurs to them that this is their own story they're telling?
Yes, it sometimes does. It sometimes does. And in Once Upon a Time, there was a little girl. The women in the book responded to 7 fairy tales with their reflections on the tale, their dreams after they reflected on them, and their active imagination work, which means the person put themselves in the tale as if in this case, as if she were the heroine, the daughter in the tale, and had conversations in writing with the king or the queen or the witch or the whoever it was that were the other characters in the tale. And what happened was, all of a sudden, she began to become clearer about what this obstacle was in her life through these dialogues or through her dream and her reflections on the tale. And initially, it did frighten several. And I would say several of the women had physical reactions. One woman developed cardiac arrhythmia and became very frightened.
Mm-hmm.
When she went to the doctor, there was no sign of any cardiac problem. And she realized she was actually frightened to continue in the group, but she decided she would come to one more session. So she did that. And then she began to realize, through her active imagination with the heroine in the story, that she was covering a very deep, heartbreaking story that she never was able to tell.
Wow.
And her body responded, you see. And in that, she was then able, with the support of the other women in the group, and of course my working with her, she was able to stay with the process.
Now we're talking to Dr. Marcella Shields. Her book is called Once Upon a Time, There Was a Little Girl. Dr. Shields, does this work for men, too?
Oh, yes, certainly. The process that I'm reporting in Once Upon a Time, There Was a Little Girl is about my work with seven women. It would certainly work for men as well. The process is not unique to women.
No, I'm sorry. Would the stories change into more of a male-oriented principal figures, if I can use that term?
Yes, very likely, because I would ask my client, well, what stories would you want to include if I had a group of men?
Right.
And I've done that, actually. I've asked men, because when I've done presentations, I've asked, men will always ask, well, what about us? Will this work for us? And I suggested that they tell me stories that they would be important for them to explore. And almost always the hero was central to the story.
So it's an intriguing idea that a fairy tale can bring out these things that other techniques don't often bring out. But you can see it when you're kind of creating this story and you've been asked to kind of think freely about what the story contains. I guess if there are things that are bothering you deeply, it would be very natural to include those kind of things in the story. So
yes. Mm-hmm.
How did you arrive at this technique initially?
Well, it actually began with a profound personal experience I had when I was studying in Switzerland in 1994. I was studying with some Jungian analysts at the Jungian Institute in Zurich.
Right.
And one of the classes was on the tale of Rumpelstiltskin. And the person who was leading the seminar, Dr. Catherine Asper, suggested that we put ourselves into the story and reflect with the other characters in the tale and see what we discovered.
Hmm.
Well, what happened was, all of a sudden, a whole decade of my life became clear to me. It kind of just fell right in front of me. And I had done my own personal analysis, because I believe that's most appropriate when you're a clinician. Otherwise, whatever is going on in you could be transferred onto your patients.
Sure.
So I had done my own work. It isn't that I hadn't done my own therapy about my own life. But it was so clear. I thought, in that moment, I know 7 women who have made a lot of progress in their work, wasn't if they weren't trying, but needed something to put them into the next place. And so when I came back from Switzerland, I went to the Toronto Children's Library. This is a wonderful place. And I just asked the librarian to show me where there were books for fairy tales for children around 7 years old, between 7 and 9.
Right.
And she gave me a stack of books. And I went through the books, and I just picked out fairy tales in which there was no nurturing maternal presence. And then I invited these 7 women to join me in a group to explore fairy tales. And I have to say that some of them looked at it and thought, well, what could this be about? But however, because they trusted me, they entered the process. And it was absolutely amazing what happened.
Now, are you still using that technique in your therapies?
Yes, I do. It depends, of course, on the person that I'm working with.
Sure.
If they're clear about their issue, then I don't need to start there. So I work with whatever the person is bringing me. But if they're not clear, if they've had some, they've had a long-term sense of not really fully living their life, I do use the process of going back into a fairy tale.
Now, many of our listeners may be feeling this is something they could use in their lives, but, you know, they're a long way from where you are.
Uh-huh.
How do they get a copy of your book?
Well, the book is available right now through Amazon.ca.
Right.
Or from the publisher, from 1-800, and within the next few weeks from the local bookseller.
Excellent.
Yep.
Once upon a time, there was a little girl. It's kind of a neat title and one easy to remember.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us today. It's an intriguing avenue of search and treatment and something quite charming about it to contemplate. So thank you for letting us in on it.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.